This is an Artist Journey podcast, the podcast for people thriving and creating as artists. I'm your host, Malcolm Dewey, and let's begin. Hi, and welcome to a new episode of an Artist Journey podcast. It's really good to be back and chatting to you again. And I want to just kick off with a few news items and talking about things that have been happening. And first off, thanks to everyone who has given me feedback and such positive response to my new book, 52 Weeks of Creative Living. It was an interesting launch because I didn't get into a lot of fanfare. It was a fairly soft launch, actually, and just notified people on my blog and social channels. And in this occasion, I had lots of people coming back to me and telling me how they've enjoyed the book. And I've been quite surprised by the amount of response, really. And maybe I think it's the time of year and people are looking already at 2018 and wanting to try out some creative ideas and explore their creativity some more. Not to get into a complete story about this day and age that we're living in, but I really do believe that there's so much chaos, confusion, worries that people are feeling these days, and just trying to get grounded is a job in itself. So I think talking about creativity and doing something as simple as sitting down and painting or making something, maybe it's something utilitarian that you can use around the house. Maybe it's sewing clothing. It can be anything, as long as it's feeding that desire to connect with something meaningful, something that you can do, something out of your mind, use your hands, and just make something old school style. All of these things show me that there is a real need for creative expression. So that book, I think, is feeding that need. It's also filled with positive and useful motivation, positive ideas, and the promise of being able to get stuck into your creative world, put your ideas into action. That's the bottom line. So, thanks for everybody who's grabbed a copy of the book, whether it's a paperback or ebook version. You can find it on Amazon. Very nice. Thanks. I have had a lot of fun with that. But nothing stands still, and we're looking ahead. And I've just started putting the finishing touches to a new course that I'm working on. It's about how to add light into your landscape painting. Somewhat different concept. A little different. It's not so much a lesson, step-by-step lesson for beginners. This is more aimed at intermediate artists. And how it really came about is somebody just talking to me about art courses they've been working on, and in particular one of my courses. And this person said that they would really just like to sit down and watch me do a painting from start to finish and see how it goes step by step. They've done the courses where I go into the theories and practical steps of painting, but now they wanted to see it all coming together and watch a painting demonstration. So I thought about that because I didn't want to simply do a film demonstration. There would have to be some instruction involved and some start to finish concept behind it. And I thought, you know, one of the things that is missing in so many people when they start their painting is how to really try and convey the light. What is the effect of light in a landscape painting? And I know anyone who is capturing landscapes. Even photographers are obsessed with the light, getting the light correct. So in a painting situation, we're looking at light and how to convey that with pigment. Your brush and a painting knife, whatever you use to put the pigment down, it has to be arranged in such a way that you get feeling and impression of the light in that landscape. So this is the concept behind the course, and it is surrounding one particular painting. And I spent quite a bit of time talking about how to manage your painting palette and the colors. And then we go into the painting itself. Although I've broken up the painting process into about five different lessons, they follow on to each other, one from the other, and you can get pretty much the entire painting brushstroke by brushstroke. And throughout the exercise, I explain in some detail what is being done and why. So I think by the end of it, anyone taking the course is going to get a good idea of exactly what to do with the paint and why you're doing it. And those little missing gaps, I think, may be filled in quite nicely with this course. So look out for that. It's in the next week. I will have that up and more news about that on my blog as well. How to add light into your landscape. So quite excited about that. All of these ideas about creativity and improving your skills, all of this led me to the main idea for this podcast episode, and that is seven mistakes that beginner painters make and how to avoid them. When sitting down to try and isolate some of the biggest mistakes that I find people in my classes are encountering, you know, sometimes it's how do you come up with the number seven when there's so much involved in learning how to paint. But I think that I'm always trying to simplify things down to the basics. So if you get the basics correct and get the basics working for you, it's a lot simpler. Everything that you discover is going to be an offshoot from a basic element. As long as you get that basic step correct, you can move forward, and then you'll be learning different things. Each person is going to be doing and encountering different things from each basic element. I try and look for those basic elements, teach those, and let each artist self-discover the consequences. There's always some slight difference, some different way of putting the element into practice, which comes up and throws up another challenge, something that only that specific artist is going to face and deal with. So let's look at what I consider to be seven beginner mistakes, and we'll discuss them. So number one, I think, is the broad concept, and it's simply about painting what you know. So often artists are trying to think up a concept and some idea that hasn't been done before, something that's going to make that subject completely different. And that is, of course, not a challenge that a beginner artist should really be worrying about. That will come with time, perhaps. If you can find something that hasn't been done before, then that in itself will be quite an achievement, I think. I think really, when it comes down to choosing a subject, it's best for an artist to find a subject that they can really relate to. It's very difficult to pull off something that you're not connected to. As an example, I've said, what if I wanted to paint a Swiss alpine scene or a Tuscan village? Now, I've never been to any of those places before. I might like looking at photos of them, but does it mean that I can pull off a painting of that subject? This is a problem that many beginners encounter, because their first attempts at painting might come from stock photos online or a magazine that they open up and really like a particular photograph and then try to paint it. Now, besides any copyright type issues involved, I'm really talking about painting a subject that is going to resonate with the artist. And I believe that only subjects that you really feel a connection to are going to come off. Simply painting a pretty scene is not going to be the answer. I think a good way for an artist to find subjects is doing things like travel, going to an interesting place, even if it is in your own town. Certainly traveling away on holiday can fill you with a whole year's worth of references that you feel an attraction to. They're associated with a fun experience. For instance, all the photographs that you take while on a holiday could sustain you for many months. Simply reinterpreting different scenes or focusing on different elements. So the point is, find a subject that you feel attracted to. Don't simply work from somebody else's photograph. The second point is a more technical issue, and it's about understanding color. Color is a complex thing, and I don't want to go into a color theory lesson. I've always disliked color theory lessons, actually, and I find that a subject that can lead to sort of people getting a sort of a glazed look in their eye. And I try to avoid getting into color theory lessons with my art students. But there are parts of the color theory system that I try to focus on. And the most important parts for me is focusing on things like the value of the color and the temperature of the color. The value referring to the degree of light or dark, and temperature referring to the perceived warmth of the color. Blue obviously being cool and yellow being warm as examples. So being able to identify a color temperature is more important than trying to come up with a name for that color. So many colors that landscape artists paint don't have a name, what we call grays. All of these grays are just some sort of saturated mix of other colors or desaturated mix of other colors forming something else. But what we're looking out for is not the name of that color, but rather, is it warm or is it cool or is it light or is it dark? Now, how do we figure out what is what? And it all comes down to one word, relationships. That color spot next to the other color spot reveals what it is by simply comparing the two. One might be bluish-violet and the other a reddish-brown. So clearly the bluish-violet's going to be cooler than the reddish-brown. Now, decide on the value of those two colors. Which one is darker, which one's lighter, and by how much? And then try and mix something that approximates with what you've observed, and you basically have got a strong grip on the concept of color. But there's obviously a lot of work that goes into it and practicing, but what I emphasize is please look at the color from the point of view of its temperature and degree of light or dark. And that'll help you get a much more confident start in understanding color in your paintings. Then the third issue is not making the best use of value change. Value change simply means that the transition from light to dark. Obviously, in a focal area, a difference between a light and a dark shape might be more pronounced, and it is that counter change from the light to the dark that attracts your eye. It gives the painting a lot of power. It makes it stand out. The first thing that I think we're hardwired to see in any situation is what is the biggest contrasting shape. So if your painting has a strong light to dark counter change somewhere in the painting, people are much more likely to look at your painting as opposed to other paintings where there is very little light to dark counter change. So I always encourage students to look for a subject to paint where there's a good strong light and dark counter change in the focal area. Then point number four is painting too thin. There's nothing worse than mean and miserly paint application. I think if you're painting in acrylics or oil paint, then make the most of the medium. Especially oils just are begging to be buttered onto the painting surface. So avoid those ultra smooth, flattened out surfaces. I know that artists who are painting ultra-realist type paintings are going to blend and smooth and get the surface really almost photographically flat. Now, if that is the object, then so be it. In my type of impressionist kind of painting, I think you can still get incredibly realistic and lifelike appearance to portraits and landscapes. But when you go up closer, you'll see well-defined brushwork, texture, and a lively, painterly kind of surface. So I don't believe that you have to smooth things down and blend to an extreme to get a really realistic painting. Even the master painters of the past, if you looked a bit closer, displayed a lot of brushwork. So in my case, I prefer to really lay it on and use good, strong, thick paint, especially in the foreground areas. Then the next point is using a brush that's too small. A common error is an artist taking, let's say, a medium-sized canvas and then picking up a tiny brush, the number two to number four round brush, and dabbing away at a surface that is much too large. All of that dabbing leads to paint that is muddied up and mixed and very little progress, a lot of frustration, and inevitably a ruined painting. So I like to encourage my students to start with a small panel, size 8 by 10 painting surface is ideal, and then get a large brush, maybe a size 8 long flat bristle brush, or size 6 at the very least, and paint with that. You can do a lot of fine painting because those brushes are incredibly versatile. But even so, it's not going to encourage you to do little dots and tiny little shapes. Instead, you're going to have to interpret the shapes of the subject into fairly large or relatively large shapes on the canvas. And this is a big step in learning how to simplify the subject. After all, what we're really doing is turning a subject into an abstract series of shapes. We just want to arrange those shapes. So if your shapes are bigger, you have less shapes to arrange, but you'll still be able to carry off the illusion of that subject. You'll have a far more interesting painting at the end. So ditch the little brush except to sign your name at the end. And then point number six is about getting closer. So often artists pick a reference photo and then try to paint the entire picture of the photo onto the canvas. Instead, try and zoom into something. You can find a part of a landscape to be far more powerful than trying to paint an entire landscape as you observe it on the photograph. So I always ask artists, can you crop down to a strong few shapes or to the real action in the reference and paint that instead? Of course, when you're outside, try and crop down through simply using something like a viewfinder or your fingers and just look for that simple arrangement of big shapes. And then finally, point number seven is picking a canvas that's too big. So many beginners want to jump into painting large canvases because it's so dramatic and powerful. But a large canvas is a tremendous amount of space to have to paint. Remember, you're not just painting one layer. Many cases, the painting requires two, three, or four layers of paint. To get all of this arranged on a large canvas can take many days or weeks or even months to pull off. and nobody has the stamina, especially a beginner, to go through that process. Use a small painting surface and you can get the painting completed in a day or even a couple of hours or even less. And that gives a much better sense of achievement. Plus, you've avoided all the little fiddly bits because you're using a large brush and you've got nice, thick, juicy paint laid out in big shapes, and you end up with something that's a lot more interesting. So I hope those 7 tips are helpful. I certainly believe that keeping things simple has helped me and continues to help. And the paintings that I get the most attention from are the ones that I've painted quite quickly and used large shapes as well. I think there is nothing like simplicity and a strong arrangement of shapes. It's something that is that every commercial artist is aware of. Posters, for instance, for movies or good book covers, they all use these ideas. Simple bowl shapes, good light dark contrast, punchy color, all of those elements work to make something really attractive. So why not bring them into the painting process as well? So as we can see, painting is a struggle. It's a glorious struggle and the good fight. And on this idea of struggling and persevering and pushing through remind me of a passage from Robert Henri's book, The Art Spirit. And as you have been following the podcast, you'll be aware that I do refer to Robert Henri's Art Spirit quite often. And there's a passage in his book, I think, that is appropriate today with the subject I've been talking about and perseverance and working hard. So I'm read from the book, page 230, and Robert Henri writes as follows. Keep painting. It's the best thing in the world to do. Learn that there are different views and that it is up to you to make your own judgments. See the value in compositional work and don't be a life class hack. Don't believe that sitting in an art school and patiently patting paint on canvas will eventually make you an artist. There is more than that. If a new movement in art comes along, be awake to it. Study it, but don't belong to it. Have a personal humor about things. You will never know your caliber until you have tried yourself. Avoid idle industry. Always leave out the padding. Be venturesome. Try new things that appeal to you. Examine others. Have a pioneer spirit. Prevent your drawing from being common. Put life into it. The way to do this is to see the model, see that the model is great, wonderful, a human creature there before you in the tragedy and comedy of life. Then draw. Avoid mannerisms, your own and other people's. Preserve your originality by painting what is before you as you see it, for things have a special look to you. Make your pictures of big pieces rather than small ones. Through the big pieces, the statement can be made frankly and fully. Get the easy naturalness of nature. Nature is full of surprises. They happen equally in great and small events and are inevitable results. They are parts of a sequence. Make your picture as full of surprises and as easy as nature. Don't ever stock your head so full of learning that there will be no room left for personal thinking. Develop your power of seeing through the effort and pleasure of seeing. Develop the power to express through the effort and pleasure of expression. So I think Henri is also telling us there, learn from the simplicity of nature. Take things as they are, and focus on the simple and easy yet powerful example that nature sets for us. Don't overcomplicate. And that is a good concept to apply to our lives as artists and creative people as well. If you tend to overcomplicate, overthink, worry, become anxious, then we're failing to learn from nature. Nature has no time for those emotions. They don't really help. They only complicate and make matters worse. So let's approach our painting with simplicity and an open spirit, and we might be surprised, and we may be able to convey those pleasant surprises to people who appreciate our art as well. So I think that's a nice thought to conclude the podcast today, and head off to the easel, do a bit of painting, get out the sketchbook, work on some ideas. That'll be a good way to spend the day, I think. So I hope you've enjoyed this little podcast and you've got a bit of grounding, a few ideas, and something to put into your creative ventures in the coming week. As always, this podcast comes to you from my course, Learn to Paint with Impact. You can find out more about this course and everything you get with it on my website. Look for painting courses and click through and follow that. And Learn to Paint with Impact comes with about 7 hours of video instruction, plenty of downloads, assignments, and instruction that'll help you get the fundamentals of painting. And all that remains is for me to say cheers for now. We'll chat again soon. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it and pass along, and encourage your friends and other creatives to get involved as well. And let me know how your painting is going, and please feel free to send me any questions about painting, about your art business even, and how to grow your art business. I'll be glad to chat about those things with you. Okay, cheers for now, and have a great week ahead.